You're listening to a Mash Those Buttons podcast, brought to you ad-free with the support of our patrons. Visit mashthosebuttons.com or stay tuned after the show for more details. You know what? I wouldn't be too surprised if they stocked more Xboxes than they did PS5s.
If you're going to go that far, like, the one benefit to buying them out would be then, and even if you turn it into a Microsoft store, like, it's one less retailer then. Like, you could just shut out Sony at that point and be like, okay, like GameStop gone, like PS4 or PS5 only available at, like, the, you know, Target, Best Buy, you know.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
The U.S. government with an antitrust suit.
But, I mean, okay, so you have to sell, like, a PlayStation 5.
Hello and welcome to the Mash Those Buttons show, where we cover the latest in games, community, culture, and everything in between. This week, we're going to discuss the PS5 UI and features being revealed, Microsoft makes an unprecedented deal with GameStop, and also Sega flaunting a game made under crunch. Tisk tisk, Sega, it is 2020. This is episode number 25, and this is for the week of October 19th, 2020. I am Jared, but you can call me Ja, and I am here with the games industry public defender, the scourge of Ironforge, and for now, still the Microsoft shill, Nick Zelenkevich.
I want to amend that I am now also a GameStop shill.
Yeah, we're definitely going to hop into that in a little bit, but how's your week been going? What's been up?
It's been going well. So, as I've been saying, like, my kid loves Knack. And there's a part in Knack 2 where you get to play, like, little tiny Knack, and there's this really big giant robot, and you have to scale the robot. And I'm telling him, like, yeah, this is just like this one game that I really love from, like, 15 years ago. And I was like, maybe when you're older, we'll check it out. I'm like, screw that when you're older. So, like, I had him stop playing Knack, and then I downloaded the remastered version of Shadows of the Colossus, obviously. You know, and I let that install. And then I was like, yeah, watch this. And so I went and I found the first thing and I climb all the way up and he's like, whoa, this is so cool. And now we've got this thing going where he plays the game. Like, he plays the game. I'll start him at the temple and then he goes off. And every so often I'm like, hey, check the sword. And, you know, he holds the sword up and he figures out what he's got to do. And so he'll go off and do that. And then he gets to the monster, you know, and then he's like, dad. And then I got to come over and I got to beat the Colossus. And then, you know, the tendrils come in and poke you, and then you get the little quick cut scene where the statue crumbles and you wake back up at the temple and I give the controller back to him. And then we start the thing again.
That's like really the only reason to have a kid, right? I mean,
well, like, we got in trouble because the other night he got to the third Colossus just as dinner was ready. And so I'm like trying to finish up cooking and also like beat the Colossus. And then, yeah, it did not go well.
Oh, yeah, Steph didn't like that.
Yeah, no, I got some side eye there, but much better tonight. Much better tonight.
This is our thing. They were bonding here.
Exactly. So it feels like I have a new companion when I play the game. Like, the first time it was me and the horse. Now it's like me and my kid. And I got to say the kid is a much better companion than the horse. Although, it is weird playing through the game again and, like, not, like, I don't want to say, like, I had, like, a hatred for the horse, but it's like there was sort of an antipathy there that it's like, I'm like, you know what? I'm cool with the horse this time. It's like the horse, it's like, you know what? I don't mind you being there. I have not tried to hit you with the sword once.
Don't pull that back, Nick. You hated that horse. I did. I have you recorded.
I did.
Saying that you hated that horse.
I did
horse.
Hate the horse, but now it's like, you know, that's the one thing too. It's like, I'm kind of like, there's a part of me that's like, I really want to just get to the part where the horse falls and just see what happens to him. But it's like, also, that's kind of terrible. Because then I have to beat the game. But then it's like, in order to beat the game, to see that the horse survived, you got to get through the really weird part of the ending. Because, like, that's a very dark game if you're paying attention to what's going on. And, like, I'm at this point, it's just going over his head. Like, he doesn't really get, like, what we're doing here. He's just like, oh, we just go out, we climb these things, and then we stab him with a sword in the head.
And it's He can survive that. A little after I was, not even a little after, I was 10 years old when The Lion King came out. But I survived The Lion King. He can survive this.
Well, he, I don't know, Frozen 2, when Olaf melts, that hit him pretty bad.
So. Spoiler. Thanks, Nick.
Yeah. Yeah, you can bleep that out. When the thing happens to that character that things happen. Well, there's a part in the movie where things happen. When that stuff happened. Anyway. Yeah, so that's my week. How's your week been?
You know what? I keep talking about all these games. Like, I was like, oh, well, you know, I'm playing through Horizon. I'm also playing through Final Fantasy, and I got Hades. I don't know what happened. I started playing Watch Dogs 2 again. I can't tell you why. All I can tell you is that I'm angry because I played the game for about 6 hours. I had some time with it before, so what the 6 hours wasn't all from this week. But I was playing it last night, and then right after I finished a mission, all of a sudden my controller stops working. I'm like, okay. And my keyboard and mouse still work in the game, so you know, I exit the game, I come back in, still not working. So I exit again, I realize Steam crashed. Okay. So I open Steam and then I go to open the game again, and now I just get a black screen. I just get a black screen. Like, I can't get the game to load again. And I'm way past the time limit on Steam to return a game. And I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, I've been playing this game for 6 hours. It's working fine. Now, all of a sudden, I can't start the goddamn game. So, yeah, I'm pretty pissed about that, because now I'm like, I have to figure out how to fix it. Like, I can't get my money back for it. So, a little upset about that. And I don't know, maybe it's because I saw something on Watch Dogs Legion. And I was like, you know, maybe I need to finish Watch Dogs. I thought I was a bit further in it than I was. No, I wasn't. I mean, it's probably only like a 20, 25 hour game. Whereas I'm 10 hours into Final Fantasy and I know I'm just scratching the surface, you know, and I'm like 25 hours into Horizon. I'm like halfway through the game without the DLC. So I'm like, you know, and Horizon's not a priority because I already beat it, you know, but you know, I would say this is probably more of a priority. And then probably right after this, I'm going to go back to Assassin's Creed and finish that so I can start playing Valhalla. But yeah, a little frustration there. Well, we're going to head into our first topic about the PS5 UI. Before we do that, though, I'd like to welcome any first-time listeners and thank you for taking the time to check out our show. Hope you enjoy it. And I'd like to thank and welcome back any returning listeners, as well as give a very special thanks to our supporters on both Patreon and our Twitch subscribers. If you want to know when we go live, just follow us at twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. And if you want to follow us somewhere else, you can follow us on Twitter, which is twitter.com/themashnetwork. And also, we'd love to have you join our Discord, which is mash.gg/discord. Join our community. Come talk to me, Nick, the other hosts, our great community. All right. So, let's hop into it. Let's talk about the PlayStation 5 UI. There was a state of play. This seems to be Sony's strategy, you know, with the PS5. You know, I haven't heard any other outlets talk about their experience with the PS5 yet. You know, we saw that PS5 teardown. We got this state of play while Microsoft has handed out Xboxes. But then again, Microsoft is definitely in a weaker position than Sony here, you know. And according to some studies, and they're kind of weak if you ask me, but there has been some data study that 75% of people, I shouldn't say people, 75% in this particular study of gamers, so it might have been 73%, pre-ordered PS5s over the Xbox, like I said. So there's evidence that suggests that more people were pre-ordering the PS5 to begin with, which makes sense, though. Go ahead.
Do we have any info on how many Xboxes were supposedly going to be available in the launch window? I know, what was it? For Sony, it was like, wasn't it like 11 million or something that they were looking at? They had to cut that down or something?
I don't remember. I don't know. I just see the thing about like Microsoft, they said they were going to have the same launch strategy as the Xbox One X. The Xbox One X purposefully did not have that many consoles available because they did not expect it to sell that fast. Microsoft is in a position where they really like, they want it to sell well. Don't get me wrong. Of course they do, but it doesn't have to sell well for them to still come out you know, in a good position because of Games Pass, you know. So Games Pass and xCloud. Because you're probably going to get Xbox Series X quality on GameCloud. GameCloud, sorry. Is it GameCloud? xCloud, sorry. Yeah, GameCloud. Oh, my bad. All the names ramming together for me. Sorry. But yeah, so Sony's State of Play, and they showed off the UI, which I actually do like it. The thing I like about the UI of the PS5 is that, and don't get me wrong, I haven't seen the UI of the Xbox, but the UI of the Xbox, it was, for all of the things that you can do previously, it was a good interface. You could do a lot with the Xbox and you can get to it pretty quickly. The PS4s or the PlayStation interfaces always seemed more streamlined to me. I always liked them a bit more. Like, oh, I just want to get to this game. I want to get to this thing. And that's that. And they've continued that with this, but they've also added features that actually could be helpful. Like, they looked at the gameplay experience and like, well, how can we improve that? And they made improvements. So first of all, the UI is developed for 4K TVs. And we're still, and in terms of 4K saturation, we're just not there. So it's definitely built for the future, right? But I think you can do a lot more from the PS menu in game now. They call it the control center. So when you hit that control center, it has a bunch of different stuff on it, right? Obviously, you can get to your power, you can get to your friends list, you can get to all the same stuff that you can get to now on the PS4. But on top of that, they have these cards that are called activities. And they can either relate to the game that you're playing. They can relate to what your friends are doing. They can relate to some media that's being passed around. It can relate to a lot. Actually, there was even one activity where it just had up-to-date news from games that you play. But this is in the game. So let's say they actually came back from a rested state. So they went from rest mode in directly into a game, which was like the new, I was going to say the new Animal Crossing, sorry, the new Sackboy game. And what you saw was, if you hit this card while you're in the game, the card will appear and show what the new news is. And if you want to go deeper, of course you can, but it also had cards that show that had to do directly with the game. So I think he was at a world menu or like kind of like a world select screen or something like that, but you can go into the activities and each world that was there had a different card, and each card had how much of the world you had completed, what objectives you need to hit. And then on top of that, you can go into the card and hit the objective that you want to go to, and it takes you directly there. Then once he was there, you can open up another card called PlayStation Help, and that's going to be part of your PS Now subscription. It's PlayStation Now? Yeah, it's PlayStation. No, PlayStation Now is PlayStation Plus. Sorry. Yeah. There we go again. Mm-hmm. But we're recording late here, folks. I'm sorry. It's part of your PlayStation Plus subscription. And if you are stuck on an objective, instead of having to go to like GameFAQs or Google or something like that, right from on the PlayStation, you can go to PlayStation Help and it will show you guides from other players. Like maybe it's a screenshot or maybe it's a video of them getting the objective or something like that. So I'm like, okay, yeah, that's actually pretty cool. That is an intuitive feature that I expect from Sony. That's what Sony does very well. Which is why they ain't out this race, baby. Yeah, so that was good to see. I like that.
I don't know. On the one hand, I like the idea of being able to like just kind of jump right over to the guides, like when you're in the game. I mean, it makes sense to stream like that process, because like you said, for the longest time, I remember like printing out the game facts and then, you know, having to shuffle the papers around while you're playing, or, you know, even before that, you know, playing like, you know, a game like Dragon Warrior or something. And then my brother's holding the Nintendo Power with all the relevant information sitting next to me. And, you know, and to go now where it's, just, you know, even now it's like, yo, I'm looking something up on my phone in the one hand, holding the controller in the other. It's nice to. That feels like a very 2020 feature that you can just jump to the game. That said, though, I just wonder about. I don't know, there's something to be said, like, about who Sony's going to be recommending necessarily. Like, I still am an old school. I don't like, I want my information in text, damn it. Like, like, yes, you know, send me to like a YouTuber who's got a lot of information about that. And I don't know, are these people, they're going to be Are they going to be sending you YouTube videos, or is this all going to be through Sony's network that it sounds like it's other players that recorded very specific hints in the Sony system that you're going to there? Because I guess the other question then is, why would, on the one hand, like, I get like, oh, hey, I can record a video and it's cool and whatnot. But then, like, you know, like, at least with YouTube, there's sort of that monetization aspect. Like, you can understand why people are like, yeah, I'm going to record a video and post it to YouTube and try to, like, you know, get some money out of it. Like, what's in it for the people that are doing it on the Sony network? Is there any kind of monetization there? Is it just to, you know, get recognized? Is it going to be actual Sony employees? Is this going to be like the old Nintendo hotline where you actually had like Nintendo employees that you could get on the phone telling you how to get through that?
When I played through Metal Gear Solid, The Twin Snakes, I got through that game with the help of a 300-page game FAQs guide written all in notepad text. How much money do you think that guy made off of that?
None. But
exactly.
But that's different though. Maybe it's not. I guess it's the same. But like, it's like GameFAQs. You're contributing to GameFAQs. Like here, like you're making these videos and you're putting them up in the Sony network. I guess it's the same. I don't know. It just feels like if you're going through and Sony's admittedly going to make it very easy to record the video and put it into their network. But it seems like if you've gone that far, like just go a little bit further, put it on YouTube. Is this going to cut into YouTube? If you're a big, like, you know, let's play person on YouTube, or, you know, you're putting a lot of, you know, you get into these games and you're putting a lot of, you know, how to beat these levels on YouTube. Is this going to cut into your revenue? Are you going to be stuck because it's like, you know, a bunch of people are doing this for free on the Sony network, so there's no point in releasing videos for Sony because people aren't getting off their PlayStation to do it?
I don't give a solid fuck about their revenue. Like, I don't care. Like, and that's, if my man who made that 300-page guide didn't get 1 cent, he did it because he wanted to be helpful. You know, he or she, I don't know, wanted to be helpful. For you to record a 10-second clip of how to get a specific item, you don't need to be paid for any of that. That's just part of helping the community.
You know, I want to point out, we're here talking about this on a podcast for which neither of us are being compensated, so.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, doesn't matter.
I think what it is, though, is that on, like, GameFAQs isn't some monolithic corporation, although I should probably research, like, who owns them and who ultimately benefits, you know, from whatever advertising revenue they have. But it feels different when, like, you control your own distribution, whereas opposed to you're just making this video and giving it to Sony. And, like, but that...
You're not giving it to Sony. Sony, like, the PlayStation is the platform. It's the platform. Like, when you make a YouTube video, you're not giving, well, technically speaking, you are giving it to YouTube.
Right.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, Sony is the platform here. Sony didn't have to put that feature in. That's not a system selling feature. It's just a nice feature to have.
No, you're right. It's a quality of life upgrade. And for the player, it's definitely, like I said, that feels like something like, well, we should have had this like a generation ago. Like, it feels very modern to be like, yeah, I just pull up like picture in picture of this video telling me what to do here.
Well, you also have to remember that, you know, Sony was running their own network before. Now their network, I'm pretty sure they've already started building out the network that's running on the Microsoft Azure. So it may be more possible to do stuff like that now. Like, this whole UI change is a quality of life for the player. They could have kept the same exact UI from PS4 and we all would have been fine.
Some of us would have been better than fun, but we'll get to that.
They could have kept the same exact UI from the PS4. And we would have been, okay, that's fine. That makes sense. But no, this is a complete, you know, quality of life change. You know?
You're right. But I mean, you know, as somebody who develops a platform, you're always looking, how do I upgrade? How do I make this better for the user? How do I make this better for the people behind the scenes doing stuff? And this feels intuitive. It's just... like, I don't know. I mean, I'm nitpicking about, like, you're giving your video to Sony, but that's only because I really have nothing negative to say about it. It's actually a great idea.
And like, you said you're always looking to increase the user experience. That's not true. Look at Microsoft at the end of the Xbox 360's life cycle. The UI changes to the end of the 360 were not done to improve the quality of life of the player. They were made to make more ad space so Microsoft can make more money. The starting... I don't know if people remember the original Xbox One interface. That shit sucked. It was trash, hot trash, actually. And like, you know, they made major improvements once they started pushing more for the player as opposed to, you know, making a buck. So, yeah, I mean, no, people have make changes. Like, I mean, Facebook, you know, train wreck of a UI update recently is more about, you know, it's not about users. That's just not about users. That's about getting more ads on your screen, you know?
It depends. Yeah, well, it depends what your business model is. And clearly Sony is not prioritizing using their desktop as an advertising, you know, an advertising revenue. That I think, you know, it makes sense. You have a console refresh, you refresh the interface and, you know, think about how things should work. It's, if you can put a picture in picture video, just pull it up like that, do that. That makes sense. And
right.
And as a Microsoft shell, I'm not allowed to talk about the 360 because they did not handle that generation well.
No, not toward the end. They were killing it in the beginning when Sony was tripping over their own feet. But toward the end, they got a little bit too confident. But that's for a different show. Yeah, but you can also, like, those cards also, like I said, they have a ton of relevant information. Like, if your friends are playing a game and you want to jump into that game with your friends, or if you took some screenshots that you maybe, like, you know, instead of having to deal with the screenshot right then and there, maybe you can pull it up a little later in that control panel or the control menu and, you know, send it off then. Oh, go ahead.
Well, no, I wonder about that. I guess that's kind of similar to how, like, the trophy system currently works, where... like technically you do something in the game and then the trophy system exists in the, on the PlayStation UI that, you know, it kind of indicates that you've done the achievement and whatnot. Because I'm thinking like, that seems like it's a bit more work for developers to integrate with. And that might be something that might be more utilized on like the Sony first party titles, but the achievement system is like very widely used. So I don't ultimately see why. I guess it couldn't be, it shouldn't be, that's, you know, it's not that big a change right. for the developer.
Yeah. So also notifications are interactive after pressing the PS button. So right now, if you have a PlayStation, a notification comes up. If you press the PS button, it sends you to a different menu. Now, if you press the PS button, that notification, you're still in the same game, but that notification just gives you options. Like, do you want to join this voice chat? Do you want to decline it? Do you actually want to switch games? Do you want to go to the PlayStation store? You know, stuff like that. So, I mean, that's cool. If you're in a party, you can share your screen with the entire party. Right now, I believe it's limited to one person. You can only share your screen, you share your game with one person. Parties are being changed, and we're going to get into that in a second, because now it looks like groups are parties, or we're not even parties, they're called groups now, and they're meant to be persistent, like group DMs on Discord. Not everybody enjoying that one, but like I said, we're going to get into it. And then the new home screen is streamlined a bit. It actually separates your games from your media applications now.
Good.
Which makes it cleaner, which I do like. I do like that it makes it cleaner. So that was actually pretty cool.
That's the one thing. I'm going to say this. I feel like you're going to be like, oh, you could just change that and do it the way you want, like with like three button presses. But that's the one thing I don't like is that it's like you have that one little TV icon on the PS4 and you got to go in there to then get to all the media apps. And that I've always felt was clunky.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I used to use my PS4 as my primary media device, pretty much. And then once they put it in there, because it wasn't always like that. And once they put it in there, that's when I kind of stopped. I was like, yeah, no thanks. But let's move ahead a bit. And let's talk about that PS4 party system. I'm sorry, the PS5 party system. And actually, yeah, the PS4 party system now, because with update 8.00, which has had a decent amount of problems. One of the things that changed was, well, two things changed, right? One, the party system is updated to look more like the PS5. And that means that instead of, like, you know, just picking a friend's name, like let's say you want to start a game with one friend and picking their name and then starting a party. And then somebody else wants to join later, you just basically open up that party, you make it public, and they can join the party, or you keep it public and all of your friends can join whenever they want. Now you have to make a group for those people. It actually makes it a bit cumbersome to use. And yeah, people are not happy with that. They want Sony to change it back. So, I mean, I highly doubt they're going to change it back. Well, what they should do, I want to say hopefully before November 10th, 12th, that's when they release. but I don't know if they have enough time. I just don't know. But I would imagine they're going to improve upon that system. Like maybe, you know, in some fashion, or maybe make both available, right? Make groups available for people that you have persistent games with, and then make parties still available. And then you can make groups, you know, parties in your groups if you want to. So maybe they'll do that. Also, with update 8.0, you can now record party voice chat. But the purpose of this feature is so that you can record voice chat and submit them for moderation. So if somebody says, somebody's like saying something they're not supposed to, calling you some names, degrading you, something like that, you can now record that and submit it for moderation.
Wait, I just want to correct. I don't think you can actually record on the PS4. I think that's a PS5 feature. But it's that you were alerted that your chats can be recorded was the issue, that they put that in the EULA. And so
okay.
that's what people are concerned about. It's one of those like, wait, are you listening in all the time? And like, you know, in my, you know, my Fall Guys party, are you listening to me talking all crap and whatnot and gonna be leaking that or something? Like that's
okay.
That's
well, I read concern, that wrong so. Then because I thought that you could record on the PS4 as well. So, but just saying you can record on the PS5.
Yeah, and then that's where it can be used then if you need to report somebody for toxic or abusive behavior, then you could have that.
But that's the thing. Like, are you gonna? Is it always recording, and then you can just save a recording? Like, because that's the thing. If somebody says something, it's highly that you might not get them to be able to say it twice. Like some people have monologues, you know, and they'll just monologue their way right into a ban. But you know, by the time somebody says something and you hit whatever combination of buttons you need to hit so that you can record, are they still going to be saying it? So
it seems like based on Sony said, voice chat recording for moderation is a feature that will be available on the PS5 when it launches and will enable users to record their voice chats on PS5 and submit them for moderation review. Yeah. So I think the only way that works is you have to be, I think you'd have to be recording like all the time to be able to then like, oh, be like, go back and I just want this clip. And maybe it's the kind of thing where it's available for, you know, a half hour or something or a day. I don't know.
Right. It's like an option that that your voice chats get recorded.
Yeah.
So I don't, and some people say, oh, this is an invasion of privacy, but I don't think you can actually remove these from the PS4.
No.
I mean, somebody may be able to find a way to do it.
Right? I wonder how this applies to like some of the various like recording laws. And I guess maybe because they put this in the EULA, they're ahead. Like I know, like I think it's like California, like you can record somebody else without them knowing. But in some states, like you need to have consent before you record a conversation and whatnot. But I guess the EULA just assumes if you're on the PlayStation Network, you've blanketly given consent to be recorded. So it's probably why they put that in there.
Oh yeah. That would make sense. So, okay. So let's move on and talk to Microsoft now. Nick is a little happy. He had a smile on his face. Like, that's why we need to record the show. But yeah, Mike, oh, go ahead.
I don't know about this one. This is a little bit odd.
It is odd, and it caught me by surprise. So an article from Ars Technica, Microsoft and GameStop have made like quite the unprecedented deal. Long story short, and I'm actually going to read some snippets here from the article from Ars Technica. But long story short, Microsoft is giving GameStop a share of Xbox's digital revenues on Xboxes that they sell or resell, because it also counts for pre-owned Xboxes as well. So I'll just read some from Ars Technica. He says, in a seemingly unprecedented deal, GameStop will now share in a lifetime digital sales revenue, in the lifetime digital sales revenue, including for full game downloads, DLC, and subscription plans for any Xbox console sold through its stores. How much that arrangement will impact the bottom line of the struggling retailer is still an open and heavily debated question, though. The first sign of this new revenue sharing arrangement actually came somewhat hidden in a press release GameStop issued last week, trumpeting a multi-year strategic partnership with Microsoft. That announcement focused heavily on GameStop agreeing to use Microsoft cloud-based infrastructure for its back-end sales system and a deal for a store for store associates to start using Microsoft Surface tablets going forward. Buried in the press release, though, there was a vague sentence that could be much more important to GameStop's future. GameStop and Microsoft will both benefit from the customer acquisition and lifetime revenue value of each gamer brought into the Xbox ecosystem. Loop Capital analyst, and I'm going to butcher this guy's name probably, Anthony Chukumba, I believe that's how you say it, confirmed the same basic outline to Ars Technica based on his conversation with GameStop management. The way it's going to work is for every Xbox console that GameStop sells going forward, GameStop will get some percentage of the revenue from every digital full game download, DLC, microtransaction, and any subscription as well. So, yeah, I mean, did not see that coming, but it kind of works in both directions, if you think about it. And this is out-of-the-box thinking on Microsoft's part, right? GameStop is struggling. GameStop is trying to become Hot Topic. they have been desperately trying to become like a Hot Topic, or, you know, those online retailers that sell like nerdy clothing and shit like that. They want to be a place for nerds. That's what they wanted to. And that hasn't been working out, in my opinion. But yeah, still though, they sell a lot of games. They sell a lot of consoles. They do. They're still important. So from the GameStop side, getting that additional revenue stream from anything from digital downloads and DLCs and subscription plans, you know, that's going to be helpful for them because they're already struggling. And from Microsoft's side, this gives GameStop an incentive to push Xboxes. It does. It really does. It gives them an incentive to push Xbox because you know, GameStop already has tons of directives for their employees. You know, when I was younger, I wanted to work at GameStop, and I'm so glad I never did. I am so glad I never got that opportunity because, yeah, like it kind of sucks, to be perfectly honest with you. But, you know, they have all these directives already, and now they'll just add it as another directive, push Xbox where you can. And when they leave, get them to buy, you know, some Xbox credits or to download a game digitally or, you know, stuff like that. That's what they're going to be pushing for. And yeah, it's a good, I never would have saw this coming. Neither would have Sony or Best Buy or Target, you know, so go ahead.
Not, I wouldn't have seen this coming, and I'm a big Microsoft shill, but yeah. I get the logic, like, okay, like you take a cut of the digital game, because presumably if this had been a generation ago and it was all physical media, like, yeah, the person would have been going back to GameSpot. Or GameStop, and it works out for GameStop, because even then, like, yeah, you might buy your console from GameStop, but then, you know, you might go to Target or somewhere else, all the retailers you just mentioned, and buy the game there. And now it's kind of like, no, you're buying your console and you're locked into GameStop for life, giving them money. Like, I get that. And I get to a degree, like, the logic of, okay, like, we'll throw you a lifeline here. You know, we'll give you a cut of all this revenue. You know, you'll give us a deal as far as, you know, buying our services and our cloud technology, you know, kind of kick it back that way. And you'll also push Xboxes. But what I almost don't understand is, if you're going to go this far, why not just flat out buy them and just turn GameStop into like Microsoft's like Xbox stores?
Because brick and mortar is dead, baby.
But then why are you even getting in? Why are you propping brick and mortar up? Just let them die.
That's because they, right, for right now, for this generation of consoles, it is still a factor. I don't think it is like the deciding factor, but I mean, technically speaking, most people will get their consoles from a brick and mortar store, right? Most people will. Like when I finally get a PS5 and I finally get an Xbox, I will walk into a Best Buy, a Target, a wherever, and pick it up. That's what I'm going to do. For right now, you know, especially when people are making recommendations, like parents are going to come in looking for recommendations, you know, and you know, GameStop has used like sneaky tactics to get things done, right? Like at this point, it is well known that they purposefully don't keep new games in stock so that they can sell used versions of that game. Like that's pretty, you know, well known. You think the jig will be up when everybody else has the game new, but not GameStop, you know? But no, they'll probably, you know what? I wouldn't be too surprised if they stocked more Xboxes than they did PS5s. I would not be surprised about that. And I'm like, oh, we don't have a PS5, but his birthday is Saturday and we got this Xbox sitting right here.
Well, see, but if you're going to go that far, like the one benefit to buying them out would be then, and even if you turn it into a Microsoft store, like it's one less retailer then. Like you could just shut out Sony at that point and be like, okay, like GameStop gone, like PS4 or PS5 only available at like the, you know, Target, Best Buy, you know, those kind of
knock, knock.
Who's there?
The U.S. government with an antitrust suit.
But if the alternative is that GameStop is going to die, and I mean, obviously they're not quite dead yet, but they're limping around bleeding. They've been bleeding out for like a, you know, like a good 5 to 10 years now. Like, I don't think. I mean, okay, so you have to sell like a PlayStation 5.
Right.
I don't know. I guess there are reasons. I'd love to have been in the room when like whoever came up with this idea was like, hey, what if we work with GameStop? Or maybe they even were like, what if we bought them? And they're like, no, that's a bad idea. But what if we just get like intricately like bonded with them? Like this feels, I don't know. It feels like a half measure. And maybe you're right to a degree that like, it's only because like it's good for this generation. And who knows, you know, in 6 to 7 years when the, whatever the hell they call the next Xbox comes out, actually it won't even be 6 to 7 years. It'll probably be like 3 to 4 with the half step. And so, but you know, but I guess like whatever, you know, if there's a console refresh in 6 to 7 years, when we get like the PlayStation stepping up as well, you know, who knows what the landscape of the land is going to be at that point? Because you're absolutely right. Brick and mortar is suffering immensely. But
the only advantage I see of them actually buying GameStop is they get Reggie.
Oh, that's right.
That's the only advantage. For those who don't know, Reggie Phil Ames, who used to be it was president of Nintendo America.
I think so.
Right.
Yeah.
He now works for GameStop. I don't know what his position is there, though.
Apparently, he might be the guy like saying, like, hey, let's cut a deal with Microsoft.
Maybe. Like,
could you imagine? You know what I mean? See, now I'm regretting that they didn't buy GameStop, because I want to see, like, Phil Spencer and Reggie together hanging out, just, like, making the gaming world awesome together.
Yeah, like, they would get Reggie, you know, if he was interested in doing something else besides what he was doing, you know. Yeah, I don't think he wants to run another major platform. I think he's had enough of that. If that was the case, he could just stay at Nintendo. You know? But yeah, I mean, I think it's a smart move. I think it's a smart move. And because like I said, Microsoft is, they are coming from the weaker position. And a lot, and you know, I think they have a very strong offering with everything that they have. Games Pass, Series S, Series X, xCloud, all that stuff. They have a strong offering, and I think that puts them on equal footing with Sony. As a matter of fact, I think they're more future-proofed than Sony. I think unless Sony makes some major changes, or major, not necessarily changes, but innovations, they're going to get left behind in the next 4 to 5 years. And I trust that Sony will do the right thing and make the right choices here. I think that they will. But the issue that Microsoft has is public perception. All that fuckery they did in 2012, I want to say, you know, when they started clearly putting profits before, or, you know, I don't want to say put profits before the game, because all these companies want to make a profit, right? But they just blatantly just kind of put it out there. Sony, you know, even with the messed up PS3 launch, was still about gamers, but Microsoft clearly showed their hand in 2012. Like, okay, we're ready to switch just from gamers to everybody. We want to be the everybody box. And that really messed them up. Even to now, the perception is that they're second rate, you know, and that's a tough mountain to get over. So yeah, these guys are full of fucking surprises, man. Like, like it's crazy. But yeah, let's go ahead and move on. Let's talk about Golden Axe, not Golden Axe. So this is an article from GamesIndustry.biz. I'm actually going to end up, I actually feel a little bit, I'm actually going to end up reading quite a bit of it because there's actually quite a bit to it. Actually, who wrote this article? This article was written by
Marie D'Alessandri.
Yes. Thank you for pronouncing that because I was probably going to butcher it. but yeah, so for those who haven't heard, Sega's 60th anniversary is coming up. And they're releasing four games on PC in terms of celebration to kind of celebrate Sega's past. So one is like a tank game. One is like a mix between... It pays homage to like Fantasy Zone, which was a game I had on the Game Gear. And I forget what the other... Oh, it's like a Streets of Rage clone, but it uses Yakuza characters. That's another one that they're doing. But they're also releasing what's called a vertical slice. And what that is when they, you know, when you want to have like a proof of concept for a game, you know, you'll have developers make like a piece of the game and then show that off to people, you know. And that's what, you know, this was made. There was a vertical slice made for a Golden Axe Reborn, I think it was going to be at the time, which is going to be like a 2.5D combat game, you know, like side scroller. And it actually ended up getting canceled. And so, you know, Sega is releasing that vertical slice, but it's called Golden Axed, the canceled, the canceled Golden Axe project? Or is it the canceled Golden Axe game? Either way, it's canceled. First of all, the name, oh, here it is, Golden Axe, a canceled prototype. First of all, saying Golden Axed is supposed to be satire because it means the game like got axed, right? That's kind of the satire that they're using. And originally the description said the game might be buggy and janky, but this is part of the history, blah, blah. Like, it was basically kind of making fun of it a little bit. However, one of the creators of that vertical slice did not find it too funny because it was made under very stressful conditions. So I'll just read what's here on a couple lines from Games Industry, but let's be real. It's a lot. So it says Sega has come under fire from a former employee for releasing a previously canceled title developed under intensive conditions. Golden Axe, a canceled prototype, is launching this week as a part of the company's 60th anniversary celebration and offers a single stage vertical slice from an attempted series reboot. But Tim Dawson, co-founder of Unpacking developer Witchbeam and former senior animator at Sega Studios Australia, criticized the publisher's decision to launch Golden Axe. And he says, this project was my personal nexus of nightmare hours, inept management, industry realizations, and heroics achieved with a small team under unreasonable conditions. So it's an odd feeling to see it surface 8 years later without context, credits, and with a joke title sequence. That's what he was talking about. If you watch the trailer, like, you'll see exactly what he's talking about. He says, during the original project, the team was asked to make a polished gameplay prototype for an internal Golden Axe pitch in 2 weeks. They were asked to do this in 2 weeks. The mandate was for a darker take on Golden Axe, which the team tried to combine with the spirit of the original game. Dawson said there were assured that management would let them develop the prototype their own way. But they ended up being pressured by a lead designer who thought he was designing it and who would invent arbitrary challenges, Dawson reported. After a week and a half, a build of the prototype was showcased to the management team, who didn't like it. They argued that there was no wow factor and that it wasn't a God of War-like 3D brawler like they wanted, among other critiques. And I want to say that was a blessing because I don't think a God of War clone would have 8 years ago. Like, it's 2020 now. You're talking 2012. A God of War 3D clone would not have done well. It wouldn't have. You know who can make a God of War clone? God of War. Like, that's like, the only God of War clone you can make is if it actually has Kratos in it. Like, you know, God of War, you know, actually, I want to say God of War 4. Actually, there is no God of War 4, essentially. But you know, so that was actually good that it wasn't a God of War like 3D brawler. And so Dawson said, I experienced a moment of clarity. Either they couldn't see what was in front of them, or they wanted me to feel bad because it was the only way they knew how to manage. I was the guy who makes playable prototypes. I had over-delivered, and if they didn't want that, they had screwed up. I like this guy. Yeah. You know, like, because he's right. I mean, like, well, first of all, I didn't see the prototype. Oh, no, well, you can see the prototype now. You can get it. I think it's only available for one day. It's available October 18th, and that's it on Steam. And you can see the prototype. And for 2012, I could see that being a good small game, you know, like an Xbox Live arcade game or something you pick up on PSN or something like that. So he continues, says Dawson and his team decided to ignore the feedback and kept working on the prototype, respecting their original vision. When he finished the build, it was unveiled. The reactions were completely different. The same management team that negged me earlier lined up to tell me how good it was now. Code Dawson said, I felt dead inside, not just because of a couple of long 7-day work weeks and the start of the repetitive strain injury in my right arm that would go on to jeopardize development of Witch's Beam Android Cactus, but because I had no trust left in the people who ran things. Right? And so, and now this is Sega responding in a statement the game to shared with GamesIndustry.biz. The publisher added, and that's Sega, we wanted to bring the work of the developers at the time to light and celebrate it as part of our history, something we did not get a chance to do the first time around. We certainly didn't mean to dredge up a painful memories for Mr. Dawson and his former colleagues or appear disrespectful. So, first of all, if you're bringing up a game or bringing up a moment in your company's history brings up painful memories for somebody, you need to do what Ubisoft is doing right now. You do. Because you can't tell me that Sega just cleared house. Like, no, those same management people work in different places in Sega. And maybe it's grown. It's been 8 years. So we'll say, okay, you can have growth in 8 years. You know? But at the same time, it's like, that's some shit you need to look into. Nobody should have painful memories at working at your office.
I don't know. I mean, you're right. I'm not disagreeing with you on that point, but I think part of this too is just the nature of crunch culture that, you know, he was put into a position here, like deliver this product in 2 weeks, give us a prototype and then expand that beyond that. And, you know, he had to work 7 days a week for whatever. And like, yeah, you can come out of that successful on the other side and maybe, you know, maybe sometimes it's worth it, but how often is it not? And especially we see how many projects we don't see that get canceled for the handful that we do know about that, you know, we're like, oh, you know, and I want to say, I remember hearing something about a Golden Axe game and then it not, you know, it not coming to
materializing.
Light.
So, yeah.
So I think the rumors about this game were out in the ether at the time, but you know, I think, you know, some people do very well in crunch culture, which is a problem because those are the people that then like perpetuate crunch culture. And some people don't. And especially when you have, you know, at the very least you can be like, oh, well, that was a hellish time I went through, but we shipped the game, and you can hold that up and kind of relish the fact like we made it, we delivered, we survived. All right. You know, let's never do that again. Whereas here it's like, you know, you go through that and then it's like, oh, it got nuked and we put all that effort in for nothing. Yeah, that's going to be painful. I think you have to, I don't want to say there aren't people that can't, you know, go into a situation knowing like, yeah, we're going to work hard at the game and I'm going to throw my all into it. And, you know, if it comes to naught, so be it. But I feel like, you know, if you're going to get that, if you're going to be that in, you know, if you're going to be that forced, if you're going to be forced to work 7 days a week, you know, overtime every day, to put something out, like, I feel like on some level you have to be like invested in the product. You have to be like, I want to see this come to light. It's not just, I'm here for the paycheck. And
right.
Yeah. When that gets nuked, like that part of you is just going to get obliterated. And so I don't blame him for feeling that way. And I don't want to say that you're not, you know, I don't want to say you're wrong for saying like, you know, Sony needs to, or Sega needs to look at its management culture and kind of look, you know, go back and revisit the managers. Who even knows if the managers that did that at the time are still with the company? I mean, they could very easily be at Ubisoft now.
That is true. That is very true.
But I mean, yeah, this is, I think, one of the negative aspects of game development. And I don't want to say like every game developer needs to think about it, but every game developer knows they need to think about it. And, you know, whether they act on it, you know, whether they act on it or not, whether they can act on it or not. I mean, part of the problem is it's so ingrained in the culture. As we've seen companies try to be like, oh, we're going to cut back and crunch, and then no, they don't. So,
right.
Who knows how it's going to go.
And that's kind of the thing. Like, it's not just crunch as a process, but it's crunch as a culture. Like, when you're given 2 weeks to build a game prototype from scratch, so that a polished game prototype from scratch, that they fully expect you to work, you know, long hours for every day for the next 2 weeks. Like, there's no way you can do that. That's part of the culture that is expected from the get-go. You know, we hear tons about crunch culture right now. Like, right now, you know, CD Projekt Red is crunching on Cyberpunk 2077, which I don't think is necessarily the same thing as something like this, right? Because for 2077, they tried to avoid crunch. And don't get me wrong, I'm not giving them a pass here. But they said they weren't going to have to crunch. Which, in my opinion, I think that they thought that they had enough time. They weren't going to have to crunch. But when it came down to it, well, we still got all these bugs and we have to crunch, you know. Crunch culture like that is, I think, more project management toward the beginning of the project, right?
Especially in this case, this is definitely like a project management thing, because either you went to this guy saying, hey, can you give me this product in 2 weeks? You know, polished and whatnot, and you just had no idea, like, oh, you know, yeah, you can do this at 80 hours, right? You know, maybe even less than that. Take long lunches, you'll be fine. Or like, you're thinking like, hey, your life needs to be hell for 2 weeks because we want this done. Like, I feel guilty as someone who goes to you and I'm like, hey, I'm going to record a bunch of podcasts in rapid succession. I'm going to need these edited by these times. You know, do you mind editing them? Like, I feel guilty asking you about that. Like, I could never envision going to somebody and being like, hey, for the next 2 weeks, your ass better be in front of your computer because fuck you.
Right. that's the thing. And that's what, you know, at the heart, I think it's like the heart of like, you know, this problem is the culture of crunch that's expected. Like the Rockstar Red Dead thing, right? That wasn't just like, oh, well, we're hitting deadlines now, so, you know, we need to crunch before launch. Like, no, when they started that game, they knew they expected employees to crunch through, you know? And I can understand it to a degree because game development takes a long time. I can understand that. When we start this game, like Red Dead had to be in development for like 7 years or something like that. GTA 6 has been in development in some form since 2013. Since 2013, right? There's only, you know, we're coming up on 2021. That game at the earliest, I'm thinking 2022. You know, I'm thinking earliest 2022. Unless this Game Awards this year, we see a GTA trailer, right? And so you're talking 9 years, no revenue coming from this game that you're developing, you know? And so companies and investors are like, we got to get this thing out, you know? So I get it from that perspective, but you can't tell me there's not something that can be done on the project management side to smooth this out for everybody. Do you hire more people maybe, you know? Do you, realign your units differently? Because some companies don't really have an issue with crunch too much. Like, I don't want to speak for Respawn because, I mean, I'll say Respawn doesn't crunch, but then somebody will come to me with evidence that Respawn did. But there's been several times where Respawn has pushed games back. Like, they pushed back the announcement of Apex Legends because one of their employees had to go to adoption court that morning or something like that. You know, so there are companies that definitely do it without crunching. And I think more of it just needs to be more of an industry-wide thing. But when you industrialize like this, everybody's looking for shortcuts. Everybody's looking for the most effective way. And it's not the most humane way.
I think the question here is like, why the 2 weeks? Like, okay, you have an idea like, hey, let's do a Golden Axe, you know, reboot. Why the pressure for 2 weeks? Like, work on the prototype. Like I can only assume they're like, oh, we have a spot in our, you know, we have a hole in our Q4, you know, projection or whatever, if we can put a game out here and if we rush this through. But at that point, then, like, you're going to rush through the whole way. And it's, and even then, they, if there was a hole that they were trying to fill, they didn't fill that hole because the thing got canceled anyway. So,
right. Yeah.
It's a bad idea from the get go. Like, I understand, like, yeah, like, you know, you need to have a deadline if you're going to, like, even for a prototype, be like, hey, but, like, why the rush on this? Maybe this is something somebody can go back. And it's not, I don't even know if it's worth it. I'm sure there's Golden Axe fans out there who'd love the story behind the undeveloped Golden Axe reboot from 2012. But, I mean, you know, maybe they're, you know, maybe the developers would, and the, you know, the project team would want to talk about that. But I don't know. It feels like, to a certain degree, this almost feels like crunch for crunch's sake. Like, they're just like, just get this done immediately. Like, why?
I think, based off of what I've seen, I think it's because they wanted to pitch it in 2 weeks. And so, you know, some, maybe they were toying around with the idea, like, well, what games are we going to, you know, pitch at this upcoming meeting? And then somebody's like, Golden Axe. You know. You know. And they're like, yeah, we got 2 weeks for this meeting. Yeah, I'll put a team together, and they'll be able to do it. That's people making promises, and like that is the shit rolls downhill, you know, process. That's what that is. Shit rolls downhill, and it's like, yeah, my boss is really on top of me about you guys getting this, you know, prototype out in 2 weeks. So whip crack, you know, that's what that feels like. But yeah, I mean, Sega should be criticized for this. And I don't know what their internal processes look now. This was 8 years ago. But there has to be a better way. And even, I mean, you know, a couple weeks ago, we talked about Sean Layton saying that, you know, games might actually need to get smaller. And I think maybe perhaps having smaller games and smaller teams would result in less crunch and better conditions, you know. Because the games industry, it's industrialized. And when, you know, it's going to try to do things the most effective way, the fastest way. And, you know, not every game needs to be a sprawling world with tons of interactions and voice lines like a Red Dead Redemption. You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't need to be that. So I wonder if that would help this. So, but let's go ahead and move on to a name I honestly forgot existed. Gamefly. Gamefly was sold to Alliance Entertainment. The reason that surprises me is because I forgot that Gamefly even existed. The last thing I heard about Gamefly was that they were starting a streaming service. Like, if you subscribe to Gamefly, you can access games via streaming. And that was, I had it. I didn't like it. I installed it. And then I never heard anything about it again. I just didn't know what happened. But apparently they are still alive and kicking. Another article from GamesIndustry.biz. Gamefly's new parent company is Alliance Entertainment, which bills itself as the largest wholesale distributor of music and movies in the United States. Gamefly will make some unspecified changes to its subscriptions in the coming months, but Alliance has already said it plans to expand both the catalog of games Gamefly users can rent, as well as adding new games, accessories, hardware, collectibles, and movies for sale through Gamefly. Gamefly was founded in 2002. Over the years, it has sought to expand beyond its core rental by mail service by acquiring digital distribution channels Direct to Drive and streaming service Playcast, but sold those to At Games and Electronic Arts in 2014 and 2018, respectively. So, I mean, this seems like it's good for Gamefly because they're going to have probably more money behind them and they can get better titles and things like that. I know, so, little history lesson, and I don't think anybody who listens to this show actually needs it, but just in case you weren't alive during this, I will go through it. So, with Gamefly was supposed to be the Netflix of video games. And you're like, yeah, Netflix streams movies. Not always. When Netflix started, you got Netflix in the mail. Basically, you would go to a website, you would pick out the movies you wanted, and they would send them to you. And then you'd watch them, and then you'd send them back. Okay?
There, so, There's an episode of The Office, I think it's in season two, where Kelly explains how Netflix works, and it feels so dated. Like, out of everything in that show, it's the one scene that feels so dated, because you're like, she's talking about Netflix sending you DVDs. Like, what?
Yeah, they send you DVDs. So Gamefly did the same thing with games. However, there were issues. One, they just did not have this. If you got a movie on Netflix, it just came. They had tons of DVDs, but Gamefly did not have tons of games. It was very rare to get the game that you actually wanted on your list. You had to wait a long time to get games. I always had to wait a long time to get games that I want, especially if it was a new game. They just didn't have the stock. So there was that. Not to mention, there was the damage that the games would get in the mail. So you could wait for a game, get it, and then it's damaged. Then you got to send it back and wait for it again. And the thing that Netflix had that GameSpot didn't is Netflix had an agreement with the U.S. Postal Service. The Netflix sleeves were treated with priority. I think they had their own like place to go in the mail carrier bag. They were sorted differently. They were treated like very well. And so a lot of Netflix discs made it back to where they needed to go, as opposed to Gamefly, where, you know, they had to... The discs had to be protected so much more, and it cost more for them to ship. It was also, yeah, Netflix also, it cost them less per item sent because of the deal they had with the Postal Service. So Gamefly didn't have any of that, and it just didn't work out that great. I had Gamefly for a while, and the most memorable game I played for was Army of Two, you know? And eventually they tried to slide into game streaming, which I thought was a good, that's a good rental service, especially on PC. And it wasn't that great. It just was not that great. So I totally forgot about it. But I mean, the games by mail service now, I mean, maybe in areas that you don't have good internet and you can't stream a game, because why would I go to Gamefly to get a game mailed when I can go to PS Now, I can go to xCloud, rent it, and instantaneously start playing it? Why? You know? So that's why I'm just like flabbergasted. that is a word I can use. Flabbergasted.
I guess it depends on the library. Maybe not all games are available on PS Now, but I'm pretty sure Gamefly pretty much has any game that's available at retail, you can immediately get. Well, assuming it's available in your queue. I'm pretty sure.
You
should at least be able to select it on your menu. Whether you actually get it or not is another thing.
Yeah, coming soon. Like, right. But maybe. But yeah, that's some news. I'm like, okay, Gamefly is still out there kicking. Still out there kicking. We're going to wrap up with a lesson, pretty much. So streamer, I guess she streams, but she's better known for her OnlyFans page. Her formerly though, the person formerly known as Poke Princess, now Digital Princess, was forced to change her name by Nintendo. So she went by Poke Princess for 8 years, a Poke Princess, and it's spelled kind of weird. And now she has changed it to Digital Princess. And this happened after she tried to trademark her name, Poke Princess, and I guess that alerted Nintendo that somebody was trying to register a trademark with the name Poke in it. And I guess they looked into her and they were like, oh, no, 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 no. So, yeah, not only did they make her change her name, she has merchandise under that name, Poke Princess. Her big mistake there was that she had Pokeballs and other Nintendo imagery, on the merch items. So she had to pay Nintendo back. She had to basically pay Nintendo all of the proceeds for those sales. So yeah, like that just really sucks, but it's just a lesson. Like, I thought it was pretty well known that Nintendo was very aggressive on their IP. Like, they protect it like crazy. I mean, a couple years back, or maybe it's more than a few years back, it's kind of just run into each other. But I remember when Nintendo wouldn't even let Evo stream Smash Brothers because they had just that no streaming game streaming policy, you know?
Or all the Let's Plays that they took down.
Yeah, the Let's Plays that they took down. And we're talking about the Super Bowl of fighting games, essentially.
Right.
You know? And they were like, no, chill, you can't do that. So yeah, I mean, that sucks for her. I do think that sucks for her, but I'm sure, like, she, I don't know how many people she has following on her OnlyFans, but I think she is pretty popular. I didn't check her Instagram to see if she had like a bunch of followers or anything like that, but that doesn't necessarily translate to OnlyFans. But yeah, so she does like not safe for work stuff on her OnlyFans. I mean, that's what OnlyFans is for. If you're selling your music on OnlyFans, you're in the wrong place, yo. You're in the wrong place. But yeah, I mean, hopefully she can rebound from this and it won't be that bad. She has some new merch out, which, you know, I'm pretty sure just her telling her story will get people to, you know, help support her. She doesn't hate Nintendo, though. She just realizes the mistake she made. You know, she's just kind of like, you know. She actually said she'll still support Nintendo. She's not upset about it, but it's just a shit situation to be in. You know, well, it's a life lesson.
I think when you've been when your brand, as it were, is so integrated with Pokemon, that even when Nintendo slaps you, I don't think you can just like walk away from that. Like you're still gonna, you know, be involved on some level. But
well, she has Pokemon tats all over her body. Well, you know, I mean, just from this image I saw of her, there's a Meowth, there's a Ghastly, there's a Rapidash. There's a bunch of stuff. There was a Entei. I think that's what it's called, Entei on her chest. You know, so yeah, there's a lot.
I'm just glad that the guy in the last segment didn't get a Golden Axe tattoo to remind him of all the pain from his ordeal.
Yeah. yeah, but like I said, we're gonna end that on a lesson. I just want to thank you guys for listening. And what's coming up this week on Mash Those Buttons? We do have obviously a new Mash Those Buttons show, a new Warcraft Reloaded, a new Sit Rep Happy Hour. We're gonna have a new Push the Point, and that's for competitive Overwatch or Overwatch League. We're gonna have a new Dropping Spicy, which is for Apex Legends. We're going to have a new Double Tap. That's for the fighting game community. A new Torn the Goblin.
Yes.
And I think that's it. I think that's everything. So that's off the top. Like, I should be writing this stuff down, to be perfectly honest with you.
You got it in your head. You know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that's what's coming up. So definitely check out those shows if they tickle your fancy. But once again, thanks for listening. You can keep up with us on Twitter at twitter.com/TheMashNetwork. Nick, where can they find you?
I am at WookieBH on Twitter. Also, you can find me here on WoW Talk, which is our bi-weekly Warcraft guild and community show. And also on the Torn and the Goblin, which this week we have Jen and Allie from Live Laugh Lore on the show and a few other podcasts. Had a great time talking to them about the Shadowlands lore. So check that out.
All right. And you can find me on Twitter at Jostradamus. And you can also find me streaming on twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. We're actually bringing Cage Drop back this coming Friday, which should be October 23rd, because the new rundown is being released on October 22nd for GTFO. So there's a brand new rundown. We have not seen these maps. It should be a good time. New maps, new weapons. I'm actually really, really excited. But you know, you can join us on Discord too, mash.gg/discord, meeting me, Nick, the rest of our community. If you play GTFO, we do have a GTFO channel. We're always looking for people to play with. So don't be afraid. We'll get you through it. We'll get you through it. All right. We encourage you guys to reach out to us with comments and questions. And, you know, you can do that via email at contact@mash.gg, or you can reach out to us, you know, via Twitter or the Discord. And if you want to help us out, the best way to do that is to share the show with others and also to rate and review on your favorite podcast platform of choice. You can if you want to take your support to the next level, you can do so on Patreon, which is patreon.com/mashthosebuttons. And you can help support Mash Those Buttons with tiers starting at $1 a month and gain early access to content as well as exclusive content. We have a Teespring store, which is teespring.com/store/mashthosebuttons. And, you know, you can also drop us a Twitch sub if you want. And I encourage you guys to stay tuned after the show to hear more about Mash Those Buttons. And with that, we are done for the day, for the night. Thank you guys very much. We'll catch you next week.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to a Mash Those Buttons production. If you enjoyed the show, you should check out mashthosebuttons.com and see if any of our other shows might interest you. All of our shows are available on your podcast platform of choice like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content, you can help support Mash Those Buttons by becoming a patron at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons, where you can receive Patreon bonuses for as little as $1 a month. You can connect with Mash Those Buttons at twitter.com/TheMashNetwork, facebook.com/MashThoseButtons, or join our Discord at mash.gg/Discord.